You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as it's a Thursday, I'm speaking to Viv Govender from RAND Swiss. Viv, we haven't spoken for so long, and it seems as though quite a lot of water has gone under the bridge since then. We've had some inflation figures and some US economic figures that support the fact that maybe we won't get an interest rate cut in June. That's what the market's saying anyway. I don't believe it. What else have we had? We've had gold going through the roof, currently just below 2,300. The oil price also, and that means the CRB index, the Commodity Research Bureau index, has done well. Bitcoin has been all over the place, but mainly up. And the other thing is, of course, geopolitics, which has suddenly been ratcheted up, and it disturbs me somewhat. Can I start with that so we can get it out the way? The Israeli attack on the Iran Revolutionary Guard in Syria has seemed to set people on edge quite a bit. Should we dismiss this as just a moment in time, or should we be worried about this?
I wouldn't dismiss it. I think it's actually works to incentives. Always look at the incentives for the result. The incentive. I don't think the Iranians want to have an expanded war with Israel. I think even if you look at October 7 from last year, I don't think if the Iranians knew how successful it would have been, they would have supported it. I think they were taken by surprise as much as anybody else, just how much damage was done. It was more a case of trying to, you know, get a reaction for the Israelis to break up the Abraham Accords and therefore stop a coalition of Arab states against the Persians effectively, but I don't think they want an uptick in tensions. The Israelis, on the other hand, I think do want an uptick in tensions. Not the Israelis overall, but definitely the government. Why? Benjamin Netanyahu is incredibly unpopular.
Yes.
If this crisis comes down, he's out. And he's not just out, he's out and possibly facing some, you know, legal troubles. You know what I mean? He's done some dodgy stuff over his period in power. And that's probably going to be something at his age that's going to be, you know, dogging him for the rest of his life, effectively. So he has an incentive to make sure the crisis continues and expands, you know. The Americans, I think, will also like, they've always wanted to do something about the Iranians ever since the Iranian hostage crisis. And I think there's not a majority, but definitely a contingent of American people in power that would like to have an excuse to attack the Iranians, especially since the Iranians have, you know, taken the side of the Russians in the Ukraine-Russia conflict. Those Shahid drones that are attacking Ukraine are effectively Iranian drones that they kind of like license out to the Russians. So that's another thing. And the final thing is this. We talk about, it disrupts global oil markets. But guess which market doesn't disrupt? It doesn't disrupt the American oil market. The Americans are a net producer of oil. If the oil market is disrupted, the people that are going to be negatively affected are going to be China and India. It's not going to be the U.S. And in fact, that might even help the U.S. because the U.S. has a net, exporter of oil. Probably benefits if oil was $150 a barrel.
So there's a few fracking operations that are saying, wait a second, this is Brent crude oil and West Texas, are pushing $90 a barrel. We can actually switch on the spigots again.
Yeah, exactly. And if there's violence with Iran closes off the Straits of Hormuz, the main rival in the world, China, becomes, you know, effectively starved of oil. And I think that the incentives, unfortunately, at the moment, really are working towards like one direction, which is an expansion of conflict. If the Iranians take the bait and do a counterattack, I think it would be something where I think a lot of people in Israel and in the U.S. would want to do that. And like I said, it's going to be negative for much of the emerging market, negative for China, definitely, as well as Iran, of course. But it's something I think that, you know, the kickback for like the U.S. would be quite limited, especially if you think about it this way. Right now, it does look as if the Russians are winning in Ukraine. The Israel-Gaza situation, Israelis are winning, but it's not playing politically well in the U.S., really not for Biden. You know, what's the one good war he can have that will, you know, kind of boost up his popularity and probably give him a win as well? It's Iran. You really can't push Russia as hard as you can push Iran. You know what I mean? Because they have the nukes.
Yeah. And the other thing is about the United States and Iran is that if Trump does get in, and let's face it, it's only 6 months away from the presidential election. If he gets in, the first thing he's going to do is say America first, and he's going to stop any aid towards Ukraine and just let it play out. And of course, that will mean that Russia won't be a landslide, but they'll certainly do better. And I noticed that President Zelensky has lowered the age for the draft, you know, the age that a soldier can be brought into the Ukrainian army forcibly. So he's obviously a little bit worried. And the European Union, well, even if they keep on helping Ukraine without American money, it's just a drop in the ocean, in my opinion. What do you think?
I mean, the Europeans are basically demilitarized. I mean, the most powerful military power in Europe is probably France. And they've had problem in West Africa, you know what I mean? People may not realize this, but when England pulled out of, or the UK pulled out of Africa, they really pulled out of Africa. But France pulled out of Africa, they really did not pull out of Africa. I mean, they print the currencies for these countries still, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
they control the currencies for their former colonies, especially in West Africa. So in terms of the situation with regards to France, I think there is an argument to be made that the French are being especially belligerent because they've kind of had troubles with the Russians already because of Wagner in Africa, which is like kind of their backyard. And the French are the ones that are talking about putting 20,000 troops into Ukraine. I don't know what exactly, because the idea would be, frankly, from the French point of view, is that they're NATO and therefore the Russians would not dare attack a NATO, you know, person in on the battlefield. But I don't think that's likely to be the case. I think the Russians would attack NATO troops in Ukraine. It doesn't trigger Article, what's it, Article 7, Article 5 of the agreement, which is like you attack one, attack all. And therefore, it would be something I think that really doesn't play. The only way that the Russians really get kind of pushed back in Ukraine is if the Americans decide to do something about it.
It's not going to happen, Viv. I can tell you that it would be a political disaster for Macron. I mean, it's all very well. You've got some European weapons and some American weapons attacking Russia with Ukraine being the proxy. But if you get some NATO troops on the ground killing a Russian soldier, then that's personal. And then it gets really, really ugly. So thank goodness that is not going to happen. Let's move on now, if we can, to inflation. Inflation in Europe, for good or bad reasons, is down to 2.4%. That came out recently. But in America, still quite stubborn. And also the American economy, via other indicators, also doing quite well. So everyone suddenly said on Tuesday, I think it was this week, April the 2nd, they said, wait a second, let's scale back some of our risk asset exposure. And the S&P and the Dow and the NASDAQ, all three came down quite sharply. I still think there will be a cut by June. What do you think?
Look, I mean, I don't think there should be a cut by June, but I think there probably will be a cut by June, July. Why do we don't think there should be? Because, you know, there is a long-term, and I talk about multi-decade benefit from establishing your credibility as a central bank to fight inflation. Paul Volcker, what he did in the early 1980s, lasted 40 years. Think about it that way. From 1980 to 2020, effectively, Paul Volcker's intervention lasted 40 years. And yes, it caused inflation, unemployment, sorry, for a brief period of time. But the strength of the U.S. you know, Central Reserve acting in that period of time allowed the U.S. to have very low interest rates for 40 years, okay? And in this case, you know, bulking before you get to your target. And right now, not only are we not getting to the target, there is some indications that we're kind of bouncing off that 3% level and rising slightly with regards to inflation. In that scenario, I mean, it doesn't really make sense for them to be cutting interest rates, especially when the economy, like you said, is doing really well. And, you know, it doesn't make sense. And it will be a long-term issue for the U.S. At the same time, you know, the U.S. is building up a massive, massive budget deficit that people are not talking about. I mean, next year, with current interest rates, the U.S. is going to be spending more on interest payments than it is on the military, you know? that is an incentive. It's over $1 trillion by next year. I'd be adding at the moment $1 trillion every 100 or so days to the U.S. deficit. $1 trillion every 100 or so days.
But every single regime, every single president over the last, ever since I've been, either in the markets or reporting upon the markets, every single president, they say, well, look at the deficit under Mr. So-and-so. It's the same, but it is beginning to get a little bit out of hand now, I would have thought.
I mean, remember TARP? The TARP program that basically was such a massive thing back in the day. You know what I mean? That was back in 2008, was the Troubled Asset Rescue Program.
Yes.
Back then, TARP was less than, I think, $800 billion or something. And now they're doing a TARP program every 3 months, roughly. You know what I mean? So we're looking at a situation in which it's kind of like the the Republicans used to be the kind of the party of no spending, and then Democrats used the party of more spending. But since the populists like Trump got into power and the Republican side, they don't really care about spending. You know, they kind of let politics get anything go. And the Democrats basically can't also pull back on spending because it goes against their base and so on. So you don't really have an anti-spending party in the U.S. or in Europe at the moment. Everyone wants to spend. And realization has come about that, you know, because of past reputation, temporary like measures like, you know, overspending and whatever hasn't really affected, you know, things like, for instance, long-term interest rates as much and so on. And people are willing to let these countries borrow. Unfortunately, what happens is, you know, this is a perception game. Once the perception breaks around this, you're going to find long-term problems that are not just going to be 1 or 2 year problems. It takes a long time to replace or to repair credibility. The U.S. had, you know, over a decade of like, you know, high inflation, problems with the inflation rate and so on, until Paul Volcker came out and basically, you know, put an end to it effectively. And if you try this and you break the confidence in the central bank, it's going to take a lot of pain and a lot of effort to repair it. And, you know, it is a case right now where, while all this is happening, people also don't talk about another fact. We're entering a demographic situation which is incredibly bad for deficits. The Western world is aging. And aging means you're going to have less people working and more people drawing money from a pension. Okay? That is not a great sign for deficits, because basically you're going to have less people contributing taxes and more people basically relying on the government to support themselves. Generally, that's bad for that's bad for deficits. We build up these deficits, and one of the easiest ways to get out of the deficit is actually inflation. Because you borrow money, one of the things you want to happen is for inflation to go up, and therefore the amount you borrowed to go down in valuation. Okay? And so I do think that we could be sitting with a long-term situation. Now, this is a massive productivity increase by something like AI. If we have the 2% growth rates that we've had historically and so on going forward, 2%, 3% growth rates historically,
yes,
much of the Western world is going to face massive budget issues in the next couple of decades.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about AI later. We'll talk about what you've seen in the few weeks since we spoke, Viv. But the long-term implications, along with the demographics that you've just highlighted, I think very, very scary, I must admit. I mean, at some stage, of course, the human being, being a resourceful character, will find some way around it, like they will with climate change, I hope. But in the short term, goodness me, you've got to look at both of those things. Right, now, somebody doesn't like something that's going on, because the dollar's been relatively stable, but the gold price has gone through the roof to 2,300. So where is it now? 2,294. Do we look at this indicator anymore? I can remember working in the financial services industry in London and someone bursting into the room. I was on the phone and he said, they're going to Iraq's going to invade. You've got to get hold of gold now. And he was furious. And of course, nothing happened after they did invade Kuwait. The thing fell on its head. But it's got some substance to it now. Not something you normally look at, but obviously you are aware of what's been going on. Why do you think it is?
Actually, if you look at the overall, you know, demand for gold, a lot more comes from China than used to in the past. I think that might be the issue around, you know, what's happening here. If you look at, you know, demand for gold from China, it's increased dramatically over the last, you know, couple of decades or so. And gold has always been more in demand in the East, you know, just in the pure, you know, like, you know, we like gold level than it is in the West. You know, there's more cultural, you know, cachet with gold, etc. And I do think that, you know, that's one thing that's happening yet. And if you look at, you know, for fear, the U.S. really wasn't basically as vulnerable. I mean, yes, there was the Iraq war, but the U.S. is uninvadable. It was a thing on the news, but it wasn't really something that affected the daily lives of Americans. I think that's maybe one of the reasons we never saw that kind of, like, you know, real scary stuff happening with gold prices in the U.S. But China is really going through a bit of a demographic and, you know, it's an economic crisis at the moment. And I think the fear there is a little higher than it is in the U.S. during the Iraq war. And secondly, you know, like I said, the cultural cachet towards, you know, gold, plus the fact that they have less options in what to invest in. Maybe that's one of the reasons we are seeing gold really go up. And there's also a slight, you know, more conspiratorial thing, if you want to indulge me.
Yes, please.
You know, ever since the Russia-Ukrainian war, one of the things the U.S. did was use SWIFT. And I've always said that was one of the big mistakes they made, because effectively what has happened now is that the Chinese and everyone else in the world that might be in future conflict with Americans are looking at it and saying, hey, this is not something I want to be, you know, totally exposed to. I want to have my own system in place. So you almost have a bifurcation of the global financial system with like the Chinese, the Russians, and maybe to a certain extent the Indians and other parts of Asia and Africa kind of trying to get their own system in place so they won't be vulnerable to a Russia kind of sanction against them, you know what I mean? If that is the case, one of the things you might want to do is, you know, build a reserve currency, and what's better reserve currency than gold? You know, if the other reserve currency is the dollar.
Do you think that China has been selling some of its holdings, its massive, massive holdings in US treasuries and buying gold, or is that just another sort of fanciful conspiracy theory?
I think there's possibility. I think from a Chinese point of view, you know, we are looking at, you know, the after the Russia war, you know, they know that if they continue to be as dependent on the US financial system, I mean, the way the Europeans basically stopped the Russians from sending crude over $60 a barrel, whatever it was there, was they just stopped them from being able to use their insurance companies. If you think about it.
The shipping insurance, in other words.
Shipping insurance companies. So you couldn't get insurance as a Russian company, and therefore you couldn't travel the oceans because nobody's let an oil tanker go on the ocean without insurance in case there's a spill.
Yeah.
Okay? That is the power of these financial institutions. You basically are not even using like a direct attack on them. You're using a feature of your insurance business, which you would not think has been such a powerful, you know, military force, but actually it was as powerful as a military force because it stopped Russians from exporting basically into the West at above $60 a barrel. They have to go other routes. And that is the kind of power that China and India and so on are seeing and saying, this is something that we can't allow to have, you know, our vulnerability is too high here. And that's going to be an incentive to make them go the other way around. I do think that, you know, the way you'd want to do this is you want to have some reserves in place to help you with that. And the reserves, you know, if you're turning away from the dollar, what's there? The euro is basically the dollar, you know, because it's linked to the Western kind of hegemony. It's gold. And, you know, if you looked at last year, the Chinese were buying, I think, 14% higher year-on-year, you know, amounts of gold than they were the year before. It kind of makes sense that that's what they're doing.
You did say earlier on that the US is uninvadable, but it is invadable in one sense, and that is via cyber attacks, which are becoming more and more frequent. I'm sure we don't hear about half of them. So yeah, that's something to bear in mind. For example, if Iran says, okay, we don't want to have a full-scale military conflict in the Middle East against America and its allies, so let's stuff them up. So they phone up their mates in Russia and say, okay, hack the Federal Reserve or hack the banking system, whatever it is, and they can do it. And it can be very, very effective if it doesn't get nipped in the bud, if you see what I mean. But I've led you astray, and you've led me astray as well with all our philosophizing about geopolitics. So let's have a look at the markets now. Rand's done okay in the last couple of days. It's 18.68, that's the dollar rand. British pound against the rand is 23.65. Euro rand is 20.29. Euro dollar 108.65. British pound 126.65. Now, if we have a look at the gold price, I said earlier on, 22.94, it's barely changed on the day. Maybe there's a big option position or something that's being defended at 2300 and it might not go through there. I think every level from now on, there's going to be some options that need to be covered. Platinum price doing well again, up $22 to $956. And palladium as well, $1,041 an ounce, up just over 3% or $31 per ounce. And the CRB commodity index is on a charge at the moment. It's CRB index, I'll just read you the commentary here, increased 41 points or 13.5% since the beginning of 2024. Commodities up 13.5% since the beginning of 2024. And I don't know about you, but that is inflationary on the bad side. And on the good side, it means the world's economy is using commodities. Crude oil, $85.24. That's for the West Texas brand. And Brent crude oil, $89.27. Both down slightly after a really good few days. US 10-year Treasury bond, that, Viv Govender, is 4.34% since we spoke. It's probably gone up 30 basis points, I would say. The South African 10-year, which worries me a bit, although today it's doing so much better because of the strength of the rand, 10.69%, got close to 11% last week. S&P 500 futures doing well, actually, up 0.5%, 5,294 for the June S&P 500 futures. And we've got Bitcoin, which continues to astound me, the amount of volatility there is. Won't come up at the moment because probably there's so much trade going on. There it is, up 2.5% to 67,496. Tell me about AI since we spoke. Any developments? I mean, there's a development every day, but what have you seen?
a couple of things. Firstly, the new chips from NVIDIA are coming out, and you know, it seems to be at the moment. I saw a wonderful podcast where a guy from Gemini and a guy from Anthropic, which is kind of like Gemini is Google, Anthropic is technically you know, independent, but now it seems to be OpenAI for Amazon. Like what OpenAI is to Microsoft, Anthropic looks to be to Amazon. And they were talking about the fact that if you had a 10 times increase in power, chip power, you'd have a 5 times improvement in the ability of those machines. So it's like an electricity rate of, you know, 0.5, which is, you know, sounds, oh, 10 times more power, 5 times more, you know, improvement. Sounds bad, but actually in reality, because these things improve, you know, constantly, if this is true, we're going to have a demand for chips that outstrips supply for a long time. And so NVIDIA looks very, very strong, and the stuff that they're doing is very interesting. But the one thing I wanted to point out was Tesla's results came out this week.
Yes.
Very disappointing in terms of car sales. But I've always claimed that if you think Tesla is a car company, then you should not be buying this car company.
It's a tech company.
Because Tesla's value, yeah, it's a software company. It's an AI company. Because if it's cars, basically, GM plus Ford together is worth 1/5 of Tesla. If you put GM, Ford, and the biggest car company in Europe, which is VW, add them all three together, they're less than half of Tesla's valuation. You know, Tesla is not producing anywhere near as many cars as GM, Ford, and VW combined, let alone multiple of them. You know what I mean? If you don't believe in the AI, you don't believe in the self-driving, don't buy Tesla.
Well, I don't believe in self-driving myself, but anyway, that's because I'm a Luddite. But yeah, I would say that you can say that Tesla is a tech company. So you're buying a tech company with some cars that get sold on the side, is what you're saying, more or less, and they stick their tech into the car. But is it a good thing? Because their valuation is still way above Ford and GM and whatever it is.
Oh, yeah, but that's the interesting thing. So what happened was this year, Musk basically took away the whole self-driving system and had a new revamp of it. So Tesla's basically retrained the whole system using AI technology as opposed to the old system that they were using. So they used the newer AI technology. And apparently, it's been incredibly successful. So if you go on, like, you know, Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it, and look at people that have Teslas, and they are all raving about it. Even people that don't like Tesla are saying that it's an amazing new system. Something about it has really changed. And to further enforce that, if you basically buy a new Tesla at the moment, it's company policy that you must get a demo of the full self-driving. Now, full self-driving is not a cheap feature. It's about $10,000. Was full self-driving, adding on to the price of a car. And you talk about the normal car costing $40,000, $50,000. This is like, you know, 20% of the value of the car that you're adding on top of that as an accessory. But apparently this is the thing. If this is true, and big if Tesla has solved self-driving, it's a screaming buy. It is an absolute screaming buy, because you can't replace what Tesla is doing, because the way Tesla achieved this was the fact that they have about 5 million cars on the road, which have 5 cameras on each of them. So there's 25 million cameras continuously getting data, and data is what you need to train these systems. Nothing else. I mean, there's no other car company in the world that comes close to this. That means no other car company in the world can get a competitor system to test this full self-driving if this is the way it works.
What's your next car going to be, Viv? A Tesla?
South Africa.
Oh, of course, yes. Yeah, I forgot, yes. Exactly. It'll look nice in the driveway anyway.
Cool joke, Lindsay. Okay. But maybe you need the Cybertruck for the bulletproof stuff, but no, we need power in South Africa, otherwise you can't make these things go. If it is true, this has happened, then yeah, Tesla is screaming by. But I said, if it is true, because full self-driving is something that not only will they give them an advantage, it may give them an unlimited advantage or an unbeatable advantage in the car market. Because if you have a car that can drive itself, the difference it makes to your life is dramatically different. You know, if you just think of it's like having a private driver. How different would your life be if you had a private driver? And that's the kind of stuff that comes into play, yeah.
Again, I'd rather have the private driver, even though few human beings are fragile, frail, and flawed creatures. I couldn't get over the fact that there's no one sitting in the driver's seat. I would be so nervous, I'd probably have a heart attack or a stroke or something. So I'll take the driver every time.
It would be like saying that you're so nervous getting into a lift, but there's no human being changing the buttons there, you know what I mean? Or controlling the lift.
The lift goes up and down. The lift goes up and down 50 feet. You know, this is a car on the road with a lot of other lunatics.
There used to be a lift guy operating it, and if this does work, and it won't just be like as good as it'll be like probably 10 times safer than a normal driver. in 10, 20 years' time, people will be looking back and think, my God, you wanted people to drive your cars. Human beings actually driving cars. These massive things that go at 100 k's an hour and weigh a ton. You wanted some person to drive it. It would be, you know, ridiculous in their minds.
So then we get aircraft without co-pilots and pilots. Is that what you're saying in the future?
Or you'd be like aircrafts where, you know, there is no, you know, automatic autopilot. You know, these guys pretty much get on there and sleep nowadays. without an autopilot. And that's what it's going to be like. It's going to be in that scenario where, you know, you personally are going to be sitting in a situation in 20 years' time where nobody drives. But yeah, but like I said, this all depends on whether it's real or not. And there's been false alarms in the past. But right now, it does seem that maybe the new technology plus the new policy from Tesla indicates that this is real.
Although, Milad, I suddenly feel like a pioneer because I haven't driven for 7 years. I gave up cars a long time ago.
For personal reasons,
I just don't think I need one. You know, not where I live anyway. Viv, let's have a look at the movers on the JSC today. I've got Implats. Look at this. Look at these diggers today. Implats up 8.9%. Sibanye-Stillwater up nearly 7%. Northam's up 6.6%. Mondi PLC up 5.5%. On the downside, AVI down 3.7%. Advotec 1.4%. Weaker. PSG Consultors lost 1.3%. Oceana down 1%. And Hammerson down 0.9%. But suddenly, and I spoke to somebody yesterday about this who was talking his book because he's got a large position in resources and mining stocks, just said we're on the verge of a new commodity, not super cycle, but up cycle, which could be 2-3 years, maybe even more if it becomes super. Yeah. So good for South Africa, good for the Rand. If the commodities go up, the Rand goes up as well, don't you think?
Oh, most certainly. But I mean, the problem with the super cycle idea is that last super cycle was driven by the emergence of China. There's no other China to emerge. India can't do the stuff China did. It just can't build the infrastructure China built, because China was able to move 3 million people to build a bridge. India can't move 400 people to build a factory. It's a totally different kind of economy because it's more democratic, and therefore it's like the US. You just can't do anything in the US, you know, in terms of infrastructure. There's too many, you know, civil rights groups and whatever that's going to come and complain about stuff. Same thing in India. So you're not going to have that China. Africa really doesn't have the cohesion to build that kind of like massive infrastructure build up. And that's the only two places in the world that can replace Chinese demand effectively. And that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm noticing. Like, look at Impala Platinum. I mean, the thing is up like, you know, 26% since the start of the year.
Yes.
But still from highs, it's down like, you know, 65% plus from where it was back in 2022. There may be a recovery, but it's a recovery from very, very low numbers.
It's off a low base, I know. But one thing that does happen with both commodities and also currencies, when they get on a trend, very, very difficult to stop them. And it could be just that South Africa gets out of a hole because of increasing prices of commodities, therefore receipts coming in, and also taxes from the mining companies going up again. And maybe they can replenish the coffers that they've raided during the budget. Anyway, as pure speculation, let's have a look at the JSE indices. Resources, yeah, predictably 3.4% higher. Industrials up 0.8%, green across the board, by the way. Financials up 1.8%, big move there. Property index 0.8% higher. Metals and mining up 4.3%. The all share itself, start with the top 40, 1.8% higher at 69,211. And the overall index, the all share, 75,373, up 1.7%. Really good days after a dodgy start to the second quarter. We seem to be set fair. Viv, are you optimistic?
I am. The only one thing, the problem I have with the resource story is the fact that we need to get the stuff to the harbors, and Transnet is not working at the moment. Mm. I mean, Kumba came out with the last of the results. They talked about the fact they had to drop production because they just couldn't get the stuff shipped out. So if we can get, you know, the infrastructure in place that works, we can take advantage of this property, of this commodity boom if it does come about. But if you don't, then unfortunately only things like platinum, which are quite easy to transport, are going to be benefiting.
Viv, thank you so much for your extended time today. Great analysis on all sorts of different subjects. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.